이런 거.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the ABCs of Law Enforcement. This episode is brought to you by the letter B. B is for burglary.
This is for law enforcement officers, law enforcement brass, true crime buffs, and everything in between. I'm Nick. My passion is podcasting, media, broadcasting. My co-host has been in law enforcement for several years. Bruce, who's a commander. That's all we're going to get to. This is what I love about our idea. Your agency is not going to get told on. You're not going to get in trouble from your agency. No one's going to know what agency. You're basically Batman when it comes to this podcast. We're going to try staying specifically away from what state we're in right now. It may come out, it may not. I don't know how everyone's going to feel about that. We'll definitely get some feedback from our audience when that comes around. But enough of me talking. Bruce, you ready to do this?
I'm ready to do this, Nick. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. All right. So the way we're going to build our episodes are basically we're going to take and dissect crime by crime. You know, obviously we're going to save the big ones for later because no one needs to jump off on first degree or second degree murder right away. We figured we'd have fun with maybe some burglary cases you might have been involved in.
Sure. Yeah, awesome. I've been involved in several.
Okay. So I don't want to jump into it right away as far as your cases, but I definitely want to give the audience, just in case they're not familiar with exactly what burglary is.
Yeah, so burglary is a crime usually involving someone's property, a residence, a commercial business, whatever. The common mistake people make is they call it robbery, which generally robbery, depending on what state you're in, robbery is when you're taking something from a person, like, you know, you hold somebody up at gunpoint, that's a robbery. If you break into someone's home, though, that would be considered a burglary. And usually it's you're going in to steal something or potentially even commit some other type of crime, like any type of felony in a house, like a sexual assault or something like of that nature, that would still, you know, the burglary charge might apply.
Okay. Case. So with that said, are there different degrees of burglary or...
There's different degrees in the sense that there's a higher jail sentence, or longer jail sentence rather, or more potential for trouble that you could get in for burglarizing certain institutions, like, say, for instance, a church.
Okay.
That would be a higher crime where we're at. So that it just all depends on what you burglarize. You know, sometimes even going in someone's car when they're not around and taking stuff out of there, that could be considered a burglary as well.
Okay.
So a lot of people don't realize that. You know, there's nicknames for that, car hopping, etc. So, you know, a lot of confusion comes in. But that would be like when we investigate something, like someone goes into someone's house unlawfully or someone's car or someone's business, that would be a burglary.
Okay. All right. So there needs to be intent to commit a burglary for you to be charged with burglary, correct?
Oh, absolutely. Because, okay. You know, there's if someone just went in there and they were unwanted in there, it basically be like trespassing.
Right. So the drunk guy that just gets off of the, gets done with his boozing for the night and bars close, he accidentally goes into the wrong house because, well, where I'm from, we really don't lock doors. But I know that's happened because in our police blotters, I've read that. But can he be charged with, or can they be charged? I don't want to just single out guys for burglary, but can they be charged for a burglary even if it's a mistake like that?
It depends.
Okay.
It depends on what happens when they're in there.
Awesome.
So if they say, oops, wrong house, and walk out, probably not. That's probably going to be like a simple trespassing complaint.
Okay.
And quite frankly, most people, when that happens, they're like, oh, he's just drunk. Okay, he meant no harm. All right, no big deal. And they don't want to even pursue that. That happens quite a bit.
Oh, okay.
But I will say this. One, when someone breaks into someone's home, that can be very devastating to an individual or a family. That's something I always kept in the back of my mind when I was out there policing, is that, you know, you've kind of invaded their space, their personal space, something they can come home to, and they, you know, puts them on edge afterwards, and they don't really feel comfortable in their own home. It's actually a scary thought. I was actually a victim of a burglary.
Oh.
Many, many years ago, my family, we moved to Arizona when I was a young kid. And I remember coming home and seeing the details I remember, because I was pretty young, was, you know, the sticks that they used to kind of intimidate the dog into a bedroom. And then obviously the places where like our stereo equipment was missing. It's actually my aunt's house. We had moved in with her for a short time when we moved there before we got our own house and got situated. And but it always like stuck with me, like that feeling of intrusion in the home and not feeling comfortable for quite some time, actually.
Wow. Okay. Well, I mean, so you have personal experience of being a victim of burglary. I kind of want to get into while you're on duty. Do you have like a specific case that from the jump you remember vividly?
Well, there's a lot of cases that I've had. Actually, when I was assigned to our detective division, that was what became kind of my specialty in a sense. I will say this: burglaries are very, very hard crimes to solve. Oftentimes, there's not a lot of physical evidence left at the scene to identify the person that did it. Most burglars don't try to break in while you're home. Mm-hmm. So, you know, people think of TV when they see the cat burglar going in the middle of the night. I mean, yeah, that does happen from time to time. But for the most part, a lot of the burglaries to a house is during the day.
That makes sense.
People aren't home.
Right.
Although I think it's getting less and less because we've become such a 24-hour society.
Right.
There's likely someone home. But if you think about most communities, a lot of people that work for a living, they pull out of their garage, and then they pull back into their garage when they come back home from work.
And that's it.
They don't really see much.
Right.
You know? The thing that we do have going for us in solving burglaries is technology. Technology with cameras. A lot of houses have cameras on them, the Ring doorbell, etc. We're catching that glimpse of somebody, potentially being able to identify them. However, the camera's great, but only if you can identify that person on the camera.
Oh, gotcha, okay.
Same thing with your physical evidence, like DNA, with fingerprints. They're great, but if somebody's not in those systems that we, you know, put that information into, then we're never going to identify that offender.
So that's, I'm really glad you bring that up. So for anyone that's listening that's not law enforcement, for some reason, Hollywood has given the stigma that, like, you are able to find anyone that's in said systems or anything like that, or you guys have face recognizing software and all this fun stuff that, like, you might not, or your agency either might not be big enough for or might not have access to it. For anyone that's listening that might be in, like, a smaller town, well, you know what? Before I get into that, before I ask that question, so you remember a couple years ago, I had a mixer stolen out of my house.
I do.
And you actually are the one that found that piece of equipment that cost me quite a bit of money.
I do remember that case.
Yeah.
And that was, I utilized a database that we have access to. And essentially it's a pawn database,
okay,
if you will, for lack of a better term. And a lot of departments have that. It does cost some money for the agency to have a membership for it, basically. And yeah, some departments can't afford that membership.
Yeah.
And so I worked with the agency that investigated your case and got them that information. And that's what it's all about. Is I think when you're challenged with a smaller community and a smaller budget, you have to utilize resources that other agencies might have access to. And we work together with each other. There's that's what I like about where I work now, the region that I work in. It's a lot of smaller communities, and they pool their resources together, and we're able to accomplish a lot more. Since 9/11, though, and that was probably in the earlier part of my career, I've been fortunate enough that we've worked with federal agencies, state agencies. We've had access to more. So it's just a matter of knowing if that resource is available to you or not, making those connections. And that's what it's all about, is putting that information out there. You know, just as everyone else uses Google, the internet to research stuff, we use it too.
Okay.
You know, and it's sometimes finding that resource for law enforcement. So there is a lot of stuff out there. Again, maybe sometimes too much.
Oh, okay.
Because it's hard sometimes especially if you work in a smaller agency, or if you're doing all the groundwork by yourself as a detective, sometimes you have to kind of like sift through what's the most practical resource to use in these situations, because you would go crazy trying to use all of them.
So you're saying that at sometimes you might have too many tools at your disposal.
Sometimes it causes more confusion, and sometimes it causes you more work. And that's why a good investigator learns how to streamline what's the best resource for whatever they're investigating.
Now, would you say burglary is one of the hardest or easiest, or depends on...
It depends. So okay. I'll say this as a blanket statement. We catch the dumb people. The smart people get away with it, right?
Okay.
And so what I mean by that is that people make mistakes, and that's how we catch them.
Okay.
And so a lot of that mistake comes from they're sloppy in what they do. Maybe they don't know how to get away with it. Maybe it's their first time, and that's a learning experience for them. Yeah. So just as, you know, most people go to school to learn things or work or have life experience, that's their criminal experience.
Okay.
And they know how to get away with it the next time. There are definitely professional burglary crews that work.
Not all Hollywood.
That's not all Hollywood. There's definitely people that make a living doing burglaries. There's a group of gypsy travelers. I wouldn't say group. They're everywhere. It's a culture, in a sense. It's a subculture. And they thrive on targeting elderly people and doing what's called a ruse burglary. Basically, they talk their way into a house, and they confuse these people. They'll pull the elderly person to the front door. Someone will go in the back door and steal all their jewelry, and they won't even realize it.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting that how put together their scheme is.
So, yeah.
So, and we get a lot of that. We get a lot of, you know, forced entry burglaries. I shouldn't say a lot. We have a fair amount. It's not a very common crime in most areas, but it does happen. And, you know, you can put up cameras. Sure, that's a deterrent. Mm-hmm. Alarm systems, definitely a deterrent. But you can never say, my house is not going to be a victim of a burglary. Basically, if someone wants to break into your home or business, they're going to.
Yeah.
They're going to.
So over your span of 2 decades in law enforcement, I'm sure you've seen several cases of burglary. Do you have one that we can go from, like, getting dispatched all the way through the end of it?
Sure. One that I've kept with me in my memory actually was when I was a patrol officer. And the case ended up getting solved. It was due to a really good detective, the work that he did. But some of the work that I did on the initial investigation is what prompted that.
Nice.
It was a Christmas burglary. So someone broke into the home over Christmas while the people were away. It was two girls that lived together. They were roommates. And a lot of unique jewelry was taken. So I actually had the one roommate try to draw out some of her jewelry pieces because they were very unique. And the detective was able to track some of that down. But when I talked earlier about departments working together, eventually they caught somebody. The offender messed up. They caught that person. Our detective was actually one of the only detectives to get them to confess to the burglary. So some of the agencies had that physical evidence link, and they were able to charge that way. We did not have physical evidence linking them. We had the sale, I should say, to the pawn shop of the jewelry.
Mm-hmm.
So we had that record of that person, that offender, selling that stuff. However, this detective was able to get this guy to talk and get this guy to admit that he did that burglary over Christmas.
That's
so
insane. Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. Came to trial. He got charged multiple charges. And when it went to trial, I love this. The prosecutor actually kept a copy of the book, The Grinch Stole Christmas, on the corner of his table in court. Never opened it up. Never, just kept it there the whole trial for the jury to see. You know, so it was like, it was really kind of a metaphor for who this person was.
Okay.
He ruins someone's Christmas.
Right.
You know, that's a memory that they'll always have around Christmas time now for the rest of their life. That, you know, someone broke into my home, violated my space, went through my drawers, you know, and took my jewelry that I collected over years.
Do you notice an influx in burglaries that time of the year?
there's definitely, we're definitely on guard. It's such a roller coaster with when you get them. Okay. Sometimes you'll get a bunch of them. Could be the same people. Sometimes they're sporadic. You know, the area that I work in is kind of surrounded by a highway system. So it's very common. The interviews that I've done over the years is they will pop off the highway, find a subdivision that they think is a good subdivision to go into, go in, find a house, and burglarize the house. I will say this, I think a common root of most burglaries is substance abuse.
Oh, okay.
I think that's a driving factor, and you know, so that's they're trying to support their drug habit.
Right.
So, you know, they're not thinking about what they're doing to somebody. They're thinking about, I need to get money so I can get drugs and get high and not get sick.
You know, that's the crazy part, because we mentioned that you helped out with the agency with my theft. We found it, you know, again, in a guitar center up closer where I'm from. And the one thing that was said was he was trying to get his heroin fix.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. That, and I would say heroin is probably one of the bigger drugs that we see as far as like people that commit crime to support their habit. Mm-hmm. It's a highly addictive substance. We are, you know, faced with this reality in our area that it's becoming more and more common. And over the last two decades that I've been in law enforcement, that problem has grown. Mm. You know, and there's several factors with that. I work in a very nice community. It's probably middle to upper middle class. A lot of the people that I come across that are addicted, especially the younger people, the story is very similar, that I played hockey, I played football, I got an injury, I went to the doctor, the doctor prescribed me painkillers, and you know, once I couldn't get that prescription anymore, it was easier and cheaper to go and buy heroin. And now that I'm addicted to that, it's not that I want to use heroin, it's that I get sick if I don't use it. And so very, very hard drug to get off of. We're finally starting to see people, not people, I should say the courts, start looking at resources to get people to fight their addiction as opposed to sending people to jail.
Okay.
It doesn't work. The jailing of addicts, not that I'm saying some addicts don't deserve to go to jail, I definitely believe that, but I know as an experienced police officer that if they don't beat that addiction, then I'm going to see them again. They're going to come back, do something again.
Sure.
Maybe not in my community, but maybe somewhere nearby.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a revolving door.
We're talking about burglary, but there are so many different, I guess the spider web of burglary can be attached to several different other things, especially with, like, you know, substance abuse.
Sure.
That's insane.
There, like I said before, there's people that are driven by drugs to do it. There's people that are just straight up criminals. I've had crimes. Another one I was going to mention was a neighbor, and it was opportunity. He knew that this neighbor left her doors unlocked for her kids to come home after school. So she created this opportunity, right? Not that she did it on purpose, not that she should expect anyone to break into her home, but this opportunity was created unknowingly by her. The neighbor saw it. He took advantage of it and went in and stole some video games and video game system. Same kind of deal. Tracked him through the pawn shop.
Mm-hmm.
We knew who this guy was. He lived down there. He was a frequent flyer with us. We'd been dealing with this guy for years. So I kind of had him in the back of my mind as a suspect anyway. Put him in the pawn shop database. Sure enough, boom, pops, nearby pawn shop. Go scoop him up, interview him. He liked to eat. Grabbed a couple McChickens from McDonald's, softened him up with that a little bit, and established that rapport with him. And sure enough, he confessed to doing it.
And so, this is when you're a detective now. This is not when you're a
patrol. Yeah, that's when I'm a detective. So okay. I think I'm jumping around a little bit here. But
No. Yeah, I mean, that's why I'm here. To help you.
Focus.
That's crazy. So, okay. So we have... How many times have you come across, like, the junkie? I don't want to say the junkie, because that could be misconstrued. But, like, the action guy that just wants to do it to see if he can get away with it. Have you run into that?
There's a little bit of both with that, though, too. So there's, going back to that Christmas Day story,
mm-hmm.
He got off on that. He, after telling his story, he literally got off on that.
Okay, so you're not talking, like, he didn't get away with burglary. He, like, the courts didn't, like, say, no, don't do that again. It was like a sexual thing for him.
It was kind of a release for him after, I think, telling the story. Okay. So, yeah. That was part of that case. So, and I wasn't there for that, fortunately. I only heard stories about it later. But, you know, that's... the guy went to jail, obviously, after the fact. He did some time in jail for that, or prison. Maybe we want to spell that out. Jail is like a county jail. Prison is more like a state-run system or federal-run system. Usually when you're going to commit a serious offense like that, like burglary, and you get convicted of it, you're probably going to go to prison. Right. Some of it depends on your criminal history and whatnot.
But. So can you basically explain a little difference between a burglary that could be convicted as a misdemeanor to a felony? Or if basically what I want, I might not be portraying it the way I want to say it, but like... The person that committed that heinous act towards me was, in my opinion, kind of gave us a slap on the wrist saying he got hit with a misdemeanor, breaking in or something like that.
Sure.
But the item that he stole was worth over like $1,300, and he only got a couple hundred dollars for it. But what's the difference? Why does that happen?
That's a really good question, actually. So I'll break it down like this. So burglary is typically a felony. It is where I work. It's, no matter what you burglarize, it's going to be a felony offense, technically. Now, reporting and charging are two different things. And what a lot of times happens is, so when it comes to the prosecution of those cases, the attorney that's prosecuting that case looks at it and dissects it and says, what can I prove? So it's not what you think what happened. It's not what you know happened. It's what can you prove happened.
Gotcha.
And that's based on our court system. Our court system is geared towards the offender. It's, not guilty until proven you're guilty. It's, the guilt level is beyond a reasonable doubt. So where we work as police officers, the first thing we have to establish is probable cause that someone committed a crime. So it's a lot lower threshold. But we have to gather enough facts to get that into court to say, here you go, prosecuting attorney, prove this, right? And we have to give them enough to prove it. So that's what happens a lot of times is we might take a report, we might investigate something that's called a burglary, let's say, but we may not be able to prove that, so we might charge them a lesser crime. It might be trespass and a theft, which would be a couple misdemeanors, because we can prove that. We have a better chance of proving that, like, you know, if I can prove that somebody went to the pawn shop and I can track their movements, that they possessed stolen property at one time, that might be an easier charge to prove. So that's why burglary is a very difficult case to get into court. It doesn't happen that frequently, actually, because just like you said, it kind of gets dissected a little bit and it kind of gets charged something lesser because it's easier to get through the court system that way. We're always working to prove what we can prove, we just can't always get it there. And so it's tough. It's and that's why burglary, I had a love-hate relationship with it. I loved solving them when I could, but it was a very difficult time solving a case of burglary.
So you mentioned, like, you know, the love-hate relationship. The one thing that I have felt comfortable with, like, especially when it was happening with me, is the officer that you were dealing with, the agency that was investigating my issue, always was like, hey, we're gonna get this. We're working together on this. How important is it to just be in communication with what's going on? Is that a big deal?
I think it is a big deal, and I think it's a big deal because, you know, first off, there's two different types of victims. There's somebody that's really involved in their case and they want justice, they want blood, and then there's people that, like, don't care.
Oh.
And just, like, you know, I don't have time for this. Especially we see that when things go to court. Like, I have my case put together, this is going to happen, I just need my victim to, you know, sign off on prosecution. And let's say my case takes a month to investigate and get put together. That month, their life is going on, and they're back to work, and life's normal again. Their insurance company may have replaced their belongings or given them a check, and now they're like, I really don't have time to go to court for all this. I'm kind of over it. whereas there's some victims. So those are the people that you'll never hear from. I'll call them, give them updates on their case, and you know, they're, oh, okay, thanks for calling, whatever. Or I might just get their voicemail all the time. Mm. Then you have the others that I don't want to say needy. They're needy, but they are engaged. I think that's a better term. They're engaged in the case. They want to know what's going on. I would say rule of thumb for me as an investigator, I would always try to make that call the day that I got that case on my desk. So the day I was assigned to it, I would call, introduce myself, because I think wheels start spinning in their mind of, there's nothing going on, I'm not important, this is not a priority, maybe this cop's lazy, etc. So that was something I always try to do. And when I teach a basic investigations class as well. When I teach that, that's like something I try to hit on as much as possible. It's like, you don't want headaches, you don't want your boss getting that phone call, call your victim. Mm-hmm. Make contact, give them your name, give them your number, you know, let them know where to reach you at. And you know, I also like to keep people busy. They want to be, they're interested in it. They want to be engaged. So it's like, okay, make a list of what was taken. You know, I had that lady draw her jewelry in the one case,
right?
Stuff like that. Give me something that I can, you know, pop into a database or visit somewhere and look for.
Perfect.
Or if I come across it, or another agency comes across it.
Well, this is that actually leads me to the question that I was looking forward to asking you the most is, how can someone protect themselves the best? I mean, obviously, a burglary in your home, that there's, you really, you can make it difficult for somebody, but if they want to get in, they're going to get in.
Yeah, ultimately.
But what's a few things that the general public can do if they are involved with a burglary to better help law enforcement?
So I think,
or best off, help law enforcement.
I think being a good neighbor.
Okay.
That's part of it. I think we've kind of come to a point in society where a lot of people don't even know their neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like you might wave at the most, but do you really know that neighbor? I know my neighbors. I talk to my neighbors.
Sure.
I let them know, hey, I'm going out of town, you know. And they are the eyes and ears of the community. One of my neighbors is like 80 years old. Mm-hmm. So she's always home, right? So that's good to have someone like that looking out for you.
Sure.
So I think communication to your neighbors is one, unless your communication is, or your, unless your neighbor is a dirtbag, and then of course you don't, you may not want to let them know that you're going to be out of town. But lights on a timer, video camera systems, alarm systems. We've had people call in from other states when they're away on vacation saying, I'm watching my camera system on my phone right now. There's people in my house, you know. And so we go and we get there, and we've caught some people. Some people have gotten away before we've gotten there. But, mm-hmm. you know, I think that's pretty cool. That's where we are with technology now.
Okay. Is,
you know, motion. You know, I talked earlier about the Ring doorbell. The motion sets it off.
Mm-hmm.
So that right away, you already kind of know that someone's on your property. So there's a lot of valuable things out there that you can purchase. But I think the big thing is making it look like your home.
Okay.
That's and again, most burglars are not looking for confrontation. They're looking to get in,
the easiest,
get your stuff,
sure,
and get out.
So on top of that, obviously, maybe, you know, if the burglary does unfortunately happen to somebody, a list of electronics, serial numbers, stuff like that. What's it? You know, what's the one item that you see taken the most?
Well, jewelry is probably the most commonly taken thing. And a lot of that has to do with it's got a lot of value, it's easy to get rid of, and it's virtually untraceable. Because if I say I lost a gold necklace, well, not a dime dozen, but it's common.
Sure.
And it's not, there's nothing unique to it, there's no unique number put onto it. Electronics are sometimes targeted, but not as much as jewelry.
Okay.
Guns, which have a serial number, they'll be taken. Because that's something of value that somebody can get rid of,
mm-hmm.
Pretty easily. They can sell that in the black market, get rid of it. So the jewelry, you know, there's tons of cash for gold, pawn shops everywhere. You know, and a lot of these places just take it in, they melt it down, and then
it's gone.
Sell it. Yeah, so it's gone forever.
So with jewelry, what would be your suggestion for...
Lock it up.
Lock it up. So safes are a big deal.
Okay. Yeah, heavy safes.
Something
that you
can't
carry out easily. You know, something I've seen on a lot of burglary cases is forced entry. Someone breaks in, they run right to the master bedroom, they ransack the drawers. Oftentimes they'll take a pillowcase from one of the pillows and just load up that pillowcase and walk out with it. So but I would say that is probably the most common target. So if you don't lock it up in a safe, keep it somewhere else in your home that's not the norm.
Okay.
So, you know, maybe in a basement in a box, or, you know, somewhere that someone's in there for 30 seconds to a minute, they might not have time or the thought process to look there for that. So, but, you know, if it's something really expensive, keep it at a bank in a safety deposit box.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, I think you pretty much explained burglary. So I kind of want to leave with kind of the lighter side. Do you have an instance or a story or an experience from, I don't know, either someone that you've come in contact with that just like you had to stay that professional, but in your mind you're doing backflips because you're like laughing hard, or anything crazy, even if it's not burglary related, I'll take it.
I think, you know, there's so many stories and they tend to blend over time. I think there's sadness and humor in law enforcement for sure. There's sadness that what's going on, what's someone's impacted by it, but there's also humor. You know, and some of the things. And one of the stories I was just thinking about, actually, so the sad part is we get called to this hotel. There's this gentleman there. He is on leave from the military. He's obviously got post-traumatic stress. He's screaming at the top of his lungs, the same thing over and over. And, oh, yeah, he's sweaty and buck naked. So he's totally not with it. We're trying to calm him down. Obviously, he's going to the hospital.
Yeah.
So that's the sad part. That's someone's brother, someone's son.
Yeah.
But the funny part was, it's myself and another supervisor on the call and a rookie. And eventually the offender, or not the offender, the person that we were dealing with got a little bit aggressive with one of the other supervisor. And so we're all kind of looking at each other and like, all right, who's going to touch this guy? And so, of course, the rookie had to earn his earn it. And he ended up doing some type of wrestling takedown on the guy, and we got him taken care of and off to the hospital to get help. So good ending of the story, but it was kind of like myself and the other supervisor kind of took a step back and like, okay, you're up. Yeah. You know, we've been doing this for a while, so I'm definitely not.
It's a perfect opportunity for a review.
Yeah, I've been here 20 years. I'm not tackling the sweaty naked guy. So.
Awesome. You're going to hear a lot more from Bruce and hopefully some other law enforcement, I don't want to say officials because that sounds like brass, but let's just, you know, cops. Everyone knows what a cop is. Guys, thank you so much for joining us, and we'll go from there. Bruce, again, thank you so much.
Thanks, Nick.
We'll see you the next time.